Welcome to Confessions of a CEO. On today's episode, I'm chatting with Ryan Norris. Ryan is a millennial entrepreneur who graduated from Wake Forest University in 2009 with a degree in psychology and statistics. After graduating, he got a job as a salesman, and over 4 years, he learned a lot of lessons that led him to writing a book. He went back to Wake Forest, obtained his MBA, and he started working at a bank. At that time, he felt so unfulfilled and so stuck, he quit. Fast forward 4 years, he is now a part of a 10 mobile home park acquisition. He has over 1,200 pads. That's just awesome. He turned his side hustle into a full-time job and makes more money now than he ever made in corporate America. This was a very exciting, very good conversation. I want you guys to especially pay attention to Ryan as he drops a lot of tidbits and nuggets to entrepreneurs. So get some pen and paper ready and tune in. So hi, Ryan. Welcome to Confessions of a CEO. How are you tonight?
I am excited to be here and honored. Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much. I can't wait to get into our conversation, but just for the guests, I want you to, you know, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Oh, where to begin? I am a family man, first and foremost. I'm from North Carolina, so from Charlotte. I'm a huge Carolina Panthers fan, and huge football fan. So I know y'all out there in Texas love you some football. So do I.
Yes.
Yeah. And man, I tell you what, first and foremost, the older I get, the more I realize how important family is. And I almost feel like every year I get older, the more I grow deeper in love with my family, and the more I realize how important time is with them.
Right. That's so true. I'm glad you said that because I know, like, as a mom, I'm a single mom, and my kids are grown. So, I mean, I'm past that phase, but now that time is so important because they're grown and they got their own lives and they do their own things. But when we come together, it's about them. It's so important to spend that time.
It's everything, and God bless you for being a single mom. I mean, my wife and I, we've got one child, and it feels like we're juggling constantly. I cannot imagine my life without her. So, God bless you. You're a fighter.
Thank you. And I mean, their dad is there. We co-parent, very well together, and I love that about him. But again, you know, like you say, family time is so important, and I think a lot of people just they take it for granted.
Yes.
Like, oh, I'll have time. I always have time. But no. I love that about you.
Well, thanks.
So we'll get into you and about your business. Like, I guess I just can't wait for y'all to really hear all the stuff that Ryan has to tell us. It is so amazing. I thank God. I feel blessed to tap into someone like him who's willing, number one, to come on my show, but also to sow into you guys and give you information about how you can, you know, not fall into the trap of what you grew up believing and how to, like, carve out your own niche in your business and stuff. So let's start with, what was the lie you felt like you were told growing up?
It's study hard, get into a good school, a great job will be waiting for you, work hard at that job, and then you get to retire comfortably. Yeah, it turns out that was a lie. So I studied really hard. I went to Wake Forest University, awesome school, and a job was certainly not waiting. Now, to be fair, I graduated in 2009, which was like the worst time to graduate because no one was hiring. But still, it was like, okay, so I'm going to work really hard. I'm going to go to a good school. I'm going to get good grades. And then, you know, a good economy or a bad economy, I still had to work really hard to get a job. And then when I finally got a job, I felt stuck at that job. And it was unfulfilling. And ultimately, I hate to say it, but jobs nowadays, even when I went back to get my master's degree, and by the way, even there is no job waiting for me after I graduated with an MBA. So it's like,
this
idea, and I graduated my MBA in 16, so the economy was hot, you know, and I found a job, but, you know, it's just, the thing is, a good, like, a college degree, and even from a pretty good school, it just does not guarantee you a good job. And even if you find a good job, because I felt like I did find some good jobs with some good people, good job does not guarantee you good retirement. And worse, a lot of times they won't provide the meaning and purpose that you inherently desire and crave as a human being. And so you end up feeling stuck.
Right.
Like, what do you want to do? You want to get promoted and then work even more hours for maybe a little bit more pay and a ton more stress? Like, forget it.
Right.
Like, that's America today. It's not this like idea where you go get a job, you have a pension, and you get to retire. No, like you have mounds of student loan debt, and you feel stuck at your job, and you don't want to get promoted, and you feel
exactly.
Yeah, I could go on. I could talk in circles about this for a long time, but I was very upset at discovering that was a total lie.
Yes, and I'm so glad that. Because I graduated in 2008 with a bachelor's of criminal justice that, of course, now I'm not using because I work at a retail grocery store. I mean, I'm a manager there. But, I mean, it's so key, like, what you're saying, because that's what we were told. Like, I think I wanted to go to college, but it was more so what
exactly.
My mom wanted me to do. Oh, you're going to go to college, and you're going to do this, and... Criminal justice, like, I love the forensics of it. So let me just be clear about that. I don't love the other side of it. So I worked in the field like 5 years, and I was like, you know what? I'm done with this. Uh-uh. No way am I going to do this, chasing criminals the rest of my life. I'm not going to do that. Like, just not going to do it.
Yeah, I think that's – back in the day, the high school degree meant something. And then the college degree was – so, like, my grandfather – he, on my mom's side, he got his college degree and then he went on to be a doctor. So he cleaned up. He did great, but that was a different time. You know, he was, I looked this up and I wish I remembered when it was, but it was like 1946 right. was the year. It was something, I'm pretty sure it was in the 40s where half of the country, it tipped, where now more than half of the country had a high school degree. And now it's like, if you don't have a high school degree, you can't find a job almost, period. So, you know, like that advice
exactly.
may have been really sound when most people, like it was a coin flip, whether or not you had a high school degree. In other words, it meant something to have a high school degree and even more so to have a college degree and even
right.
more so to have a master's. But it's just not true nowadays.
Right. Right. That's so true. I love how you bring that, like you bring that all together, because it's like now we have children like that I'm raising, you're raising, other people are raising. And, you know, one of my kids were like, well, mom, how much do you owe in student loans? And I was like, don't ask me that.
I don't want to talk about that.
Like, don't ask me that, you know, but it was a fact finding because he turned out and said, well, I don't want to go to school. Like, I don't want to go to college. And I mean, it devastated his dad, but I was like, do you, boo? Like, I was okay with it because I knew, you know, he has that entrepreneurial spirit. And I love the fact that he embraces what I do. He gets to listen to the podcast, listen to entrepreneurs like yourself who talk about, like, yeah, I went to school, but guess what? I still carved out my own way. You know, even with
school,
education.
Schooling is like this. So let's just use an example of a plumber. School is like a really expensive plumbing tool set. Like, is it going to make you a better plumber?
Right.
Yes, absolutely. But here's the thing. If you're not a good plumber, if you don't show up to work, if you don't work hard, if you're not constantly looking to improve, it doesn't matter how much you spend on your tools.
Right. That's so true. Like, it doesn't even make a difference. I think that's what people miss out on, like, yeah, it's school, but still, oh my gosh, good information. So let me ask you this. What potential regret as an 80-year-old fueled you to chase your dreams in your 20s?
That's an awesome, awesome question. And it ties in really well to the next phase of kind of what I experienced, which was, okay, I'm stuck. Am I going to sit here and complain and play the victim, or am I going to do something about this? And I read a book called The 4-Hour Work Week by Tim Ferriss, which, by the way, it's, if you haven't read that book, it is an absolute, absolute must read. And in that book, he talks about many great things, but the one in particular that really made me think was, in so many words, like, what's the worst that can happen? Like, vividly imagine just the absolute worst case scenario. And so I did that, and it made me realize it's not that bad. Like, as long as I'm not, as long as I'm not paralyzed permanently, or just bankrupt beyond the point of ever being able to recover from it, which is probably not going to happen.
Right.
I'm going to survive. And to my family point earlier, right, when you think long and hard about things, it really all comes down to the relationships in your life that are really the most important thing. So for me, I realized, I vividly imagined myself on my deathbed, which was not pleasant, but it was just eye-opening. Because what I realized is at 80, thinking back on my life, even if I failed epically, mm-hmm, at 80 years old, vividly imagining myself in the future, I would look back and I would have courage. I would be proud that I had courage when I was younger to chase my dreams. And not only that, as a father, what better way can you teach your child humility and perseverance and going chasing your dreams and not making excuses than to do it on your own and to lead by example? So once I realized that, I realized, why am I chasing somebody else's dream? You know, like I worked in car sales, and it was actually, believe it or not, probably the best, if not the best job, top two best jobs I ever had was working for a car dealership. I worked for the Hendrick organization, which is to this day a family organization, and I absolutely love it. But there is one undeniable fact about that. I am helping Mr. Hendrick achieve his dream, not my own. And it doesn't matter where you work.
Right.
Wells Fargo, Publix, Kroger, it doesn't matter. Exactly. You are working on someone else's dream.
Right.
And when you are 80 looking back on your life, you're not going to be like, man, I'm so glad I stayed at that job. That was the right thing to do. No, you're going to be like, man, I should have taken more risks when I was younger, because I have friends that are my age now who did it and they failed and they're in the same spot that I am.
Right. Yeah. That makes sense. Like, for me, I turned 43 this year, and I've never felt more freedom in failing forward or failing fast than I did when I, because I used to work for Kroger, and I left Kroger, and I went to another competitor and started working. But then I went in with a different mindset. Like you said, I went in with, I don't want to retire from HEB. I don't want to so into their stock plans and all of that. And I don't know how long God will have me at this job. So, you know, I want to say that too, but I feel the way you feel. Like, I don't want to wake up or be on my deathbed and be like, why did you not jump? Why did you not take those risks, those leaps of faith to have your own? And even if you failed, you still tried. And if you didn't keep going, like, what do you say to your children, your children's children? What legacy are you creating if you just play it safe? And I feel like having a job, and I say that to myself too, is you're playing it safe. Like, you got to get out there and you got to do your own thing. If that's what
I want to throw this in before you ask the next question, because I think it's really relevant. There's a Bible quote that I'm going to butcher because I'm Catholic. We're not that great at the Bible. We read it, but we don't memorize it. There's a line that says, in so many words, ask and you shall receive. And when you study that line, it's not, hey, God, I want a bike, right? It's God, I want this bike, and I'm going to ask you for it, and I'm going to pray for it. And through those prayers, you're going to basically penetrate my subconscious and basically help motivate me to go and do what I got to do to get it. So in other words, it's not just ask me and I'm going to give it to you. It's ask me and I will help you find the way.
Yes, there was a a friend of mine on Facebook the other day that she posted a video by someone, and it actually referenced the scriptures, Matthew 7:7, where people say, you know, she was saying, well, just because I ask something in God's will doesn't mean I'm gonna, just because I ask something in God's name doesn't mean that I'm going to get it. And I said, you know, my response was, I agree 100% with that. You have to ask, you have to seek, you have to knock, and he's going to give you the provision if right. it's in his will for you to have those things. So, like, you hit it.
Yeah, you have
like,
to take action. It's not, hey, can I have this? Okay, thanks. No, it's like, if it's in my will, you will right. take action. I will give you the tools to get it, but I'm just going to give it to you.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. Oh, this is good stuff, y'all. Y'all better be taking notes. This is good stuff.
We're just having fun. We're just having fun.
So let yeah. me ask you right. Well, I'm loving it. I'm loving it. So I'm about to get into business just a little bit. Just a tad bit. So what would you rather be? Rich with no time with family, or broke but all the time?
I think I already answered this earlier. Relationships are everything. I mean, it's not just like because I've really taken a lot of time to ask who am I at my core and really take that time to self-assess.
Mm-hmm.
But also it's, if you look at, so there's an entire field of psychology called positive psychology, where I think it was in the 90s, some big names in psychology basically asked this question, like, why are we spending mm-hmm. so much time asking what's wrong with people? Why don't we ask what's right with people? And so for the last several decades, there's been a ton of research into what's called positive psychology, in which they figure out, okay, what mm-hmm. makes people happy? And I'll just give you a couple of highlights. Like, for example, The Happiness Project, Gretchen Rubin, gotta read that. It's an amazing book.
Yes.
Barbara Fredrickson has a book, I think it's just called Positive Psychology, outstanding. There's a bunch of great books on it, and it'll teach you how to be happier.
Okay.
And it's not a lot of things you have to do. But one big thing that is just over and over and over again, whether they're studying centurions, people who are over 100 years old, or they're just it almost always comes back to relationships, relationships, relationships. And my son was a premature mm-hmm. Baby, and it was a wild experience because he was about 32 weeks, so he was early. And I was there with my wife in the hospital, sleeping by her side every night she was in the hospital. And then my son had to go to the NICU, which was just a roller coaster of emotions. And the whole experience was about a month. Mm-hmm. And I was there every single day because I am my own boss, and I did not have to worry about PTO.
Right.
And I did not have to worry about getting passed over. And I didn't have to worry about taking a leave of absence
right.
because I was my own boss. And in that moment, it really made me realize, what's an extra $100,000 per year? What's an extra in the bank if I miss that moment?
Right.
So for me, it's not just about like my own happiness and it's finding meaning and purpose and family. It's also that. Yeah, like you need to have enough money. There was a study that came out a couple years ago that basically said, if you make over $70,000 a year USD, it increases how happy you are up to $70,000. Then above that, it literally doesn't matter. More money will not make you happier. If you're broke, mm-hmm. more money will actually make you happier because it relieves stress. But when you have enough to pay your bills, like it does not add any happiness to the bottom line. So to me,
right.
it is all about family. And even if I was broke, as long as I was healthy and you know, with my family, it's just, the older I get, the more I realize money is just not, you know, chasing cars and houses just does not fulfill you the way your son, when your son looks
right.
at you and smiles, it's just, come
exactly.
on.
Exactly. Exactly. And I love that you said that, because there was a period of time where I was broke. I was broke and I was homeless. After my divorce, which was really bad, I lost everything. Mm. Like, to the point where I pretty much had to start. I did start off. I had to start over. But in those moments where when relatives would allow me to stay with them, and I was able to spend time with my kids, I was the happiest. And I noticed when, like, my daughter had just went off to college at that time. So she stayed in the dorm, which thank God for that. And then I had a really good friend that my son stayed with. And so I could go and spend time with them. But that's when I was at my happiest. Now, you know, fast forward, you know, 4 years, you know, I thank God that, you know, he's allowed me to regain those things, because he told me in his word, he's going to give me double for my trouble. He's done just that, beyond that. I mean, he's given that to me, and it feels good to put a key in a lock. But at the end of the day, what makes me happy is to be able to see my children walk through that door and to be able to spend time with them, because without them, I don't think that fight to recover, to regain, to redo would have probably been there, because for what purpose other than my own would it have been
right
there? If not for them. So yeah, I'm with you. Like, I'll be broke with my family. We all just be broke together. And just be happy.
Yeah.
Just be happy. Yeah, I love that. So you were in corporate America. You needed to escape that. How did you identify what your dream job was?
It took years. I looked at probably over 100 businesses before I finally stumbled into what I was meant to do, which is I own and operate mobile home parks. And I'll put it to you this way. So there's a bunch of different ways you can analyze businesses and see if it's a good fit for you. Step one, you have to know who you are and what you're really passionate about, because if you fall victim to a hype story, you're going to quit, you know. And if your goal isn't continuous, you're going to quit. So, silly example, but in high school, I got my black belt in Haitian Ryu Karate. And when I did it, because my goal in high school was always like, I want to get my black belt. I got to get my black belt. And I got it. I tested like a week before I went to Wake Forest, like a week before I went to college. And I passed it and I got my black belt. I never went to another class again, ever. And it's just like, even if you dedicate yourself for almost 4 years to one goal, if you achieve your goal and that's it, it's not continuous, you're done. If you're not inherently passionate about the underlying thing, you're going to quit. So you need to know yourself. But I'll put it to you this way. It's like, for me, it was like finding my wife. And she hates that I like compare this to her. But it's not a comparison, sweetheart, because I know you're listening to this and I love you very much. But when I met my wife, I knew. And I don't know how else to describe it other than just the stars aligned. And it wasn't Disney. It was more like, huh, this is it. You know, it wasn't like, you know, that we did the spaghetti thing, like that one lady, was it the Lady and the Tramp? Like,
None
of that happened. Like, our first date was to a pizza place and there was a hole in my shirt. So nothing romantic or Hollywood about it. We just knew. And it was like that for my business. You know, it was, I just knew. So I met my business partner. We decided we were going to start a business together. And when that idea hit our plate, I don't know how else to describe it in any other way than everything just made sense. And the thing of it is, the only reason why everything made sense was because I knew myself very well. And it's just like dating, because you'll go out and you'll see some people that are really sexy, and you see some businesses that are really sexy, and you'll fall for that hype story, and you're like, wow, I can make so much money and I can do all of these things. And what you'll find is, if you find yourself saying, wow, I could make a lot of money, or wow, it allows me a lot of autonomy, and you don't find yourself saying things like, wow, my charitable goal in my life is to help kids get their education, underprivileged kids get their education. If I own affordable housing and mobile home parks, not only can I build a business that's for profit, because I am not non-for-profit, that is for profit, but I can also help kids get their education. That is why I do what I do. If I had to pick one reason, that is a very crystal clear, specific reason to do what I do. That is what you need. Right. Otherwise, you'll fall victim to a hype story.
And I think I'm just going to be real, because you and I, we can be real. That is the BS that we fall into, the hype. When you don't take the time to just look at it for what it is, like what you said, those core values. And to me, honestly, Ryan, I don't want to rock with nobody who doesn't even look at the core value. What are your core values? Why do you do what you do? And if it's for the superficial things that at the end yield nothing, then how many you gonna make?
Yeah, why are you? What,
we
like,
can't.
Like,
you know,
like business. What I started off this saying about the lie that our parent, that your parents and my parents told us. Although to be fair, maybe it just wasn't really them actively trying to lie to us. It just turned out to be a lie. Like, you're doing things for other people. You should never do anything for anybody. You should. No one is gonna look after you like you look after you. So even though both of our parents, you know, they had the best intentions for us, they didn't know the market was going to go the way that it did. And you have to not keep up with the Joneses. You have to go, what really matters to me? And then I don't care what other people think. As long as my friends and my family are here and my relationships are in place, I'm gonna go do me. I'm gonna go and make myself happy.
Exactly. And I think that's where we miss out on at this event I was at today. And it was a event that kind of helped people in the blogger world and influencers like get paid. Like, we're out here posting, but are you yielding clients from that? Are you getting money for your expertise? And someone said just what you said, like, at the end of the day, what are you getting? Yes. Like, what is it for? Like, what are you yielding from all of that?
We like to brag. Human beings love to brag and do what I call signaling, where they basically show, they flex. They're like, oh, look at me. And it's like, what are you achieving by doing that? Other than in the moment you feel good. Like, it's just such a superficial, fleeting thing to, humility is just so important for so many reasons, but specifically here, humility will allow you to see beyond the need to signal and the need to be showy and flex on people and go, you know what? Because I remember, I got to tell you this real quick. There's a friend of mine from the car dealership. I won't say his name, but he showed up his first day. He was like, I'm almost 50 years old. I'm 5 foot flat. I'm not funny. I'm not smart. I'm always going to make like next to no money in my life. But hey, I don't care. That's who I am. And I was like, you and I are going to be friends. You're not trying to pretend that you're something you're not. You are real. And for that, real recognizes real. And I respect that.
Right. And I think when you tap into that, so like also, you know, at this event, one lady, she works with influencers and bloggers. And she was very humble. Whereas, you know, it was some other ones were like more like, oh, it's me. It's all about me. But she was so humble and she was just like, this is what I can do for you. And this is what I cannot do for you. You know, I'm not going to sell you a dream. Yeah. I'm just going to give it to you how it is. And I really appreciated the things she was saying. You could tell that she was genuine and she wasn't just trying to throw out all these accolades that she's achieved, which I'm not knocking your achievements, but what do those how can those achievements help me get to where
I hate to say it, but that's what selling a dream is much better than selling the tools to get there. My podcast is called Mobile Home Parks in Real Life. And I stress the in real life portion. And I know I'm not going to have a billion downloads because I'm saying some real stuff. I'm on the corner selling vegetables. I'm the marathon coach going, it's going to take months to train for your marathon. And you may still not be able to do it because your body might not let you. And I hate to say it, but the people who the marathon coaches who sell the most stuff are the ones that are hype people, right? Like, oh yeah,
exactly.
Download my DVD, like come buy my DVD on proper stretching techniques. And it's like, no, the coach you want is the one who's going to kick your butt and go, you need to start running immediately. You need to start eating better. You need to, you know, that is what is going to get you there. Otherwise, all you're doing is being entertained. If you listen to podcasts and you're like, oh my God, that's a great idea, and then you don't do anything, you have just been entertained.
That's it. That's it. Like, what are you doing with the tools that you have, you know, to make things happen? I was on a live just recently with my same friend that we did this event today, and her thing was about women empowerment events. And I don't know if you've heard, Ryan, but a lot of times, especially in the African-American community, that's what we'll do. If we want to get our name out there and we want to be known, we just throw on an empowerment event. Like, women just are the ones that need to be empowered so much. So it was a lot of speculation and debate about that. And so I'm kind of on the other side, because I do plan and I help manage lots of women empowerment events. And I said to her, I said, I feel like it's what you go there to get, but what you also implement. If they're sowing into you and giving you the information, but you do nothing with it, don't blame the event for not doing what it said. You got to do. Didn't we just talk about Matthew 7? You got to ask, seek, and do the work. So I'm like, if they give you the tools and you're not using them, don't blame the empowerment event for not being what it said. It was exactly what it said.
It's the same thing with college. Like, this idea that you just go to college and there's going to be a job waiting for you is just not true. Same thing.
Right. 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 It's, oh my gosh, that's so true. This is good stuff, y'all. I'm telling y'all, y'all definitely need to make sure y'all are sharing this. Y'all are following my friend Ryan. This is good stuff. So let's talk about the 1% rule. Tell us, what is it?
Sure.
And why did it help you go full-time?
So this, the 1% rule is something I came up with. And so I was a stats minor undergrad, and my graduate degree was concentration in business analytics statistics. And so, in other words, I got some bell curves. We can talk bell curves all day long. In statistics, you need to have basically your confidence interval. You need to hit basically the 5% confidence interval, where basically something happened 1 out of 20 times. So in other words, 5%. In other words, what I'm getting at is 2 standard deviations to the appropriate side of the curve is statistically significant. In other words, if you are really, really, really smart, then you have to be 2 standard deviations to the appropriate side of the curve. In other words, if you are going if you want to fight Goliath and you're David, you're going to get crushed. So in other words, it sucks to do this, but you know, especially so, like when I was growing up, I was in all the honors classes and whatever, and all my teachers were, you know, they'd fawn over you. Oh, you're so smart. You're so this. You're so that. It's like, I took the SAT. I took the GMAT. I'm not 2 standard deviations to the right side of the curve. I'm just not that smart. I mean, I'm pretty smart. I think I was like 80th, 90th percentile. It's pretty good. But guess what? There are a lot of people that are way smarter than I am. On my best day, if I got a 90th percentile, in a room of 10 people, one person is smarter than me. In a room of 100 people, 10 people are smarter than me. In a room of 1,000, 100 people are smarter than me. In other words, what I'm getting at is, even if you are statistically significant, you're in that 5% to the right of the curve, there are still so many people way smarter than you, or way harder working than you, or way better looking than you, or way better lucky than you. Because think about it. Some people are just lucky. You know, born to the right family, born in the right country, this, that, the other.
Right.
Thing. So in other words, what is the 1% rule? Well, if you want to be 1% wealthy, you have to be 1% something. You have to be not only 2 standard deviations to the appropriate side of the curve. You really need to be like 3 standard deviations. You really need to be rare. So here's the thing. If you are not 1% smart or 1% hardworking, because I am not, or 1% athletic or good looking or lucky, if you are not 1% anything, how are you going to get into the 1%? And I will tell you, you will find out where you are in that 1%. And for me, I am 1% willing to do what other people are not willing to do, period. Yes. I was willing to start my business. I was willing to cut my salary down to $35,000 a year from a banking salary, which was much higher than that. I drive a 10-year-old car. I went and I lived in a mobile home on site, being the physical property manager for 14 months every other week, 4.5 hours away from my wife and my friends and my family, to make it happen with recourse debt over my head. So if it failed, right. not only did I lose it all, I also lose all my properties. I also lost all my retirement and all my everything. So in other words, what I'm trying to get at here is
right.
I did something that most people were not willing to do. And if you are not 1% smart or 1% hardworking, because I'm not, I certainly wasn't, you have to be 1% willing to do something. And I got to tell you, the easiest way to do right. it is by being 1% willing to do what others are not.
Exactly. I love how you said that. Ooh, I wish I had a collection plate. You know, I'm Baptist, Brian. So, you know, we run around the church when you say what you need to say. I love that. I just finished a blog post that I haven't published, but you just gave me the confirmation I needed. That talked about disciplined people. Disciplined people and people who want to make stuff happen will do what others won't. Every single time, they will do what other people won't do. They won't care about the competition, the saturation of the market. They're going to get out there and get ish done because guess what? They don't care, and they want to make sure that they're putting their best foot forward. Like you said, if you're not 1% smart, you need to be 1% of something if you want to make it work.
And I will tell you, and I'll add a little bit onto that. What was I going to say? Oh, man, I lost it. Oh, yeah. What value and money is value, and value is either something mm-hmm. that somebody doesn't want to do or can't do. And so, for example, in my line of work, property management, most people can do it. It's pretty simple. It's just that people just won't do it because they don't want to have those conversations with tenants or get complained at because there's a big mm-hmm. scary tree or a pothole or this and the other thing, because they don't want to do it. There's value there, and where there's value, there's money. And when there's money, there's freedom mm-hmm. from your job and a path to being full-time in your dream.
Right. Right. And then, oh my gosh, like this is just good stuff, because I don't think people really think about it on that level. They just see it as, okay, well, this is something I want to do. Oh, God, it's going to fall in my lap. Just make it happen. Really?
No, you have to go out and get
really?
It.
I just want to say, seriously. Yes, yes. And that doesn't mean that you're not trusting, you know, in God or whatever your faith is. But the Bible says faith without works is dead. So you have to be willing to do something to get what it is that you want. For me, I work 10 hours a day. 5 days a week, and then I schedule what I really want to do, my podcast, my blogs, even my event planning and management. I schedule that because I eventually don't want to be there. I'm grateful for it now, but I don't want to be there. So some mornings I'm getting up at 4 o'clock, 5 o'clock, so I can get work done before work. And then sometimes I'm staying up a little bit later than maybe I should, because I'm willing to do that to get out of where I'm at now.
That is exactly what I mean by that rule, because I don't know very many people at all who are willing to wake up before work to put in work in their side hustle. And that 1% mentality will put you in the 1% of wealth.
Yes. I'm like, I don't want to be here forever, because like you said, I'm sowing into someone else's dream. What am I doing for myself if I'm not willing to do the work? And I hate when people tell me stuff about time. I wrote a blog post about, you know, time and how we make time for what it is that we want to make time for. We do that.
It's the truth. You either find a way or you find an excuse. Everybody has the same number of hours in a day.
Exactly. So what is it that you're willing to do? And like for me, I'm willing to put in that extra work for the time being so that I can get out of whatever this is. And don't get me wrong, this is a great company, but it's just not a great company for me to retire from. I want to leave my own legacy for my children. Whether they want to run my businesses after I'm gone or not, somebody will. So I want to build that to, you know, be able to do that. So, oh yeah, this is good stuff. I'm loving this. So tell me, how long did it take you to go full-time in your
So I found mobile home parks in July of 2015. I did not go full-time for about 2 years, but that's not really fair, and here's why. So the first year I was finishing up grad school, so I was basically doing it on the side. My second full year, I had a full-time job at a big bank, and I was still doing it on the side. But prior to those 2 years to get full-time, I also had spent 3 years searching for whatever my dream job was, whatever my dream business was. So, and not only that, I was reading, I was networking, I was developing skills. I was selling cars. And I was learning skills while I was there. So it's really not
right.
And then it's really not fair either, because I had plenty of jobs growing up in college and high school. And it's really not like, oh boy, I found what I want to do. Now in 2 years, I get to go full time. No, a lot of luck happened, but I also created a lot of my own luck. What it ultimately comes down to is it's not quick, period. So I've been full time for a little over, so is this, we're in September of 2019. So it's been 4 years and 2 months since I've 2 or 3 months since I discovered my business. And it's 2 years and change since I went full time. Even when I went full time, I mentioned earlier, I paid myself $35,000 and cut everything. And I mean, like almost all of my expenses to go and literally live in a mobile home to chase this dream. So it's like, I made a big sacrifice. So it wasn't just like, hey, in 2 years, I get to, you know, now that I found it, in 2 years, I'm going to go full time in my side hustle. No, like step one, I was prove the concept works.
Right.
Like I proved that I can make money, because it was my third property I bought before I went full time. So I had two properties that were cash flowing before I went full time. And then number two, it took an entire year to plan. It took a year to get everything ready to do it. So it's not like, hey, I found it, I'm going to quit. No, it's like, hey, I found it. Great. Now let's prove this thing makes money. And then let's take an ample amount of time to make sure I'm not just jumping in the deep end. No, like you need, like David Tepper, Carolina Panthers, you need to make strategic risks.
Yes. Keyword, strategic. And people think they take strategic and they make it something ugly. To me, it is not ugly. Strategic to me is that you making very calculated, very intentional moves.
Yeah. Well thought out, well planned.
Exactly. And you're not, you know, just BSing around with whatever it is that, you know, you want to do. You're taking the time to be able to do what you need to do, and you're actually sewing and working in it.
Yeah.
That's so cool. I love that. So now, you know, I got to ask you, Ryan, because we brother and sister.
I love it.
You got to tell me, what is your Austin Powers excuse loop? Because I love Austin Powers. I think he is like,
yeah, Mike Myers is hysterical in that role. He has,
yeah.
So true story. I actually grabbed drinks with a friend of a friend of mine. He's now my friend, but at the time he was just a friend of a friend who wanted to get into single family home flipping. And so my friend Jason, I love this guy to death. He was like, hey, a guy at work really wants to go full time in real estate. I know you don't do home flips, but are you willing to have a beer with this guy? I was like, yeah, totally. Absolutely. I love talking to anybody. And I was like, just as long as he knows up front, like I don't know much at all about home flipping, so I don't know how helpful I will be. Long story short, it was one of the best networking events I think I ever had, because for a multitude of reasons, but I remember I was sitting down with this guy and my buddy Jason, and he hit me with the same thing the fat bad guy said in Austin Powers, where he goes, I'm unhappy because I eat, and I eat because I'm unhappy. So he's in this loop, right? He's in this excuse loop that he can't escape from. And so this guy hit me with, you know, I flipped like two or three homes this year, and it was in May or April. So it was early in the year. So I'm like, you flipped two or three homes. You've got two daughters at the time. So I'm like, you got two kids. They're little kids. You work full time. You have a family. You have a full-time job, and you have found three homes and flipped all three, and you've made profit on all three in like a quarter or maybe two quarters. What is stopping you from going full-time? You have proved the concept.
Right.
And so he was like, well, the thing is, I don't have enough deals. And I was like, okay, but what would you say your number one limiting factor is to finding deals? And he's like, because I don't have time.
Right.
And I was like, you have deals because you don't have time, and you don't have time because you don't have deals. And so this kind of gets into what I just mentioned, and I totally I know this is supposed to be your next question. What are the two steps you need to make it happen before going full-time in your side hustle is exactly what my friend went through there, which is you need to get to that point where you're like, literally the only thing stopping this from exploding is my time.
Right.
First, you have to prove the concept, and then you have to plan. So with right. that guy, he hasn't quite gone full-time yet because it's not been a whole year yet. And not that it has to be a year, but he's still in the planning phase, but he has proven the concept. So now that he's busted through that excuse loop,
right.
that like, oh man, you know, I got to stay at my job. Like, and I asked him point blank. I'm like, do you really? I was like, you went to college. You did good things professionally. What if you bet big on yourself? What if you just said, you know what? Give me 12 months. I think I can do this. What happens if you can't in 12 months? You go get a job.
Right.
And you're back to square one. No harm, no foul. And when you're 80 looking back on this, you're going to be proud that you did.
Right. 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 And I love how you said that, because last year when I did this event, I do this event every year in Atlanta called Work, Pray, Slay. And the curator of it, she sews into women entrepreneurs. And her thing is, you know, you got to be willing to do the work. And last year, her theme was, all bets on me. And I think that's what we miss. Like, we won't even bet on ourselves, but we want somebody else to do that.
Yeah, you have to. If you want what most people don't have, you have to be willing to do what most people won't do.
Right.
And one of the biggest things there is to have the courage to do something like quit your job and to go full time into something that is not going to guarantee you a paycheck.
Right.
But if you are willing to bet big on yourself, as long as you take strategic risks, I mean, always have a chance of losing it all. But if you have the courage to fight through that, if you don't have the courage to fight through that, no one else is going to have the courage in you. You have the first, it has to be born in you first.
Right. Right. And again, I think when you do that, you know, God will protect you based off of you asking, seeking, especially when you're within his will, that you will get those things. Like, everything is not an overnight success. Like, everything doesn't happen overnight. It takes blood, sweat, tears. I think you're appreciated more too, because you can look back on where you were to now where you are.
Right.
I love it. So tell us the two steps again that need to happen.
Yes. Step one, prove the concept works, make some money. Right. Step two, plan. And then when you have planned, then you got to jump off the diving board, and you need to bet big on yourself and probably make a big sacrifice. Maybe not to the point where you like cut your lifestyle and uproot yourself hours, you know, and to live in a mobile home and by yourself with a blow up mattress and two lawn chairs and a silly TV that doesn't even have a stand.
Right.
Like, you don't need to go to the extreme that I went to. And even to be fair, I mean, I know folks who made much bigger sacrifices than I did. So, I mean, I really had it easy for a lot of reasons. You need to make a sacrifice. The definition of the word sacrifice is, in so many words, giving up something of value to you in the hopes that you will get something more valuable in exchange. So inherently, by definition, making a sacrifice hurts.
Right.
It's painful. But if you have courage and you bet big on yourself, that reward is there.
Exactly. Exactly. Oh, I love that. Because I don't think people like pay attention like that. Like they seriously just, it's like they almost don't get it. Like you gotta be willing to sacrifice something to get something. That's just what it is.
Nothing good comes easy.
Exactly. And especially when it's not worth it. I mean, yeah. if it's not easy,
everyone would do it.
Right, right. And I think sometimes people are not willing to do that. Like you said, who's willing to get up and do work before work? I am. Because at the end of the day, you know, I know that I don't want to be there forever. And I know that I don't want, that's not the legacy I want to leave my children or their children. Companies fold, pensions dry up. So I don't know. I want to create my own legacy for my family that I don't have to depend on another company to provide that for them.
Yeah.
Yes, I love it. I love it. So tell us this, because I know there are like a lot of people who, you know, they're staring down years before going full time in their dream. Like, and it hurts me that people are that way. Does feeling stuck at their job mean they won't build skills for later on?
So I want to start off by saying you are not alone if you feel stuck. You are not alone if you feel depressed. I was there more than once. I was there at the car dealership. I loved selling cars until I didn't anymore. And then I went and worked for a bank. And after I got my MBA, the great thing about the MBA is that they sell you on, you can pivot to another career without having to start at the bottom. And although that is true, I just got stuck faster. And right. I actually gained 20 pounds in less than a year. And then lost that 20 pounds once I went full time in my side hustle. And I don't think I really changed any of my habits. I just was that depressed. I was just that depressed. So first and foremost, if you're listening in and you're inspired by the conversation that we've been having today, like don't stop listening to this episode and then get back into that loop of depression. Cause I've been there and it's awful. And it's awful. You need to realize that you are building skills in your current role, whether you realize it or you don't. So when I was selling cars, I thought it was, I could have thought it was beneath me. I could have been like, I went to a good school and now I'm selling cars with people who barely finished high school. No, that is not how I approached that. I went, I am going to learn everything I can learn here. And in retrospect, I am so glad I had that job because I learned how to sell. I learned how to persuade. I learned how to negotiate. I learned how to do customer service. I learned how to de-escalate really stressful situations. I learned how to do operations and get good surveys when you in a really stressful environment. Buying a car is really stressful. That was monumental. Those skills I developed there were monumental to starting my own business. So even if you feel like you are stuck and you're depressed and you're gaining weight because you're just straight depressed, like I have been there. I know what you're going through. Right. And I have to tell you, do not, like, I can't remember who says this. I think it's Willie Jolly. He says, if you are going through hell, don't stop.
Yep.
Like, keep fighting. You are learning things. And in retrospect, you will look back and you'll go, wow, I'm so glad I had that experience because I learned so much.
Exactly. Exactly. And I think that it's a matter of perspective. It really is a matter of perspective when you think about like what it is. Someone mentioned the other day, we were talking and they said, either I win or I learn, I never lose. And I was like, that don't even make no sense. Like, because we're so like, I'm moving around. I'm like, that don't make no sense. Wait a minute. But then I had time to kind of like sit and like unpack that.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's a good perspective to have. Like, I don't lose. Even if I didn't get the desired goal, I learned something.
Yes. You have to look at it. You have to look at it like that. And the funny thing of it is, so I was over dinner with my wife tonight. I was telling her that because she was very against mobile home parks when I started out. And I actually on my podcast have a whole episode about it where I'm like, here's the mic. You can say whatever you want. Just no bad words. No bad words. And don't give away any of my secrets. And she just roasted me for like 10 minutes. But it was a great conversation because anyone who's listening wants to listen to this, I encourage you. It's called Spousal Buy-In on my podcast. And it's really a conversation about marriage told through the lens of entrepreneurship. And the reason why I'm bringing this up is because I remember, so now that it's my business has worked and things are going well, knock on wood, they continue to go well. Every now and again, she'll apologize and she'll be like, I hope you don't hate me for not doubting you, but doubting the idea, you know, doubting the concept up front. I honestly didn't think it would work the way it did. And I'm like, sweetheart, honestly, and this is going to sound backwards, but I'm a competitive person. And I hate losing more in an absolute value sense than I enjoy winning. So in other words, I feel a loss more than I feel a win. And oftentimes winning is very anticlimactic. The fact that if you had been like a cheerleader the whole time, it wouldn't have been as powerful as being like, I don't know if this makes sense for us and our family. Because that made me go, you know what? I'm going to prove you and anyone else wrong. And so you got to find that for you. You got to find that for you. But for me, you know, I think their fear of losing is a real thing that people experience. And if you suffer from that, you need to find your way to cope, you know, with it. Like I say, like they say in sales, like you need to figure out how to pick up the phone.
Right.
Like what, however you justify it to just make that next call. Like you've got to do that. And you and I share the same thing. It's like, it's not losing. You know, it's not losing. Let the loss fuel you to keep fighting and learn everything you can so you don't lose the next time around.
Exactly. Exactly. I think it, like you said, it's totally about your perception and how you decide to take it. And I think that's where, you know, we get that fight from too. Like, okay, I'm about to knock this out the park. And if not, guess what? The next time I will. I won't do it. I won't lose twice in a row. Yeah. That won't happen.
Yeah. That's the truth. I'm like you. I hate losing.
Yeah. I just like, oh, I won't lose twice in a row. So
like, I remember losses from my childhood, and I couldn't even tell you one time I've won something major in my childhood because I don't remember the times I've won. I hate losing. Like I will probably, like if I run into someone from my childhood, there's a good chance I'll bring up a time they beat me at something. It's just like, you got to find whatever fuels you.
Right. Right. And I think it's that fuel that gets us to the point where, like you say, we're going to be willing to do something. Like, you know, you're going to crap or you're going to get off the pot. Which one are you going to do?
Yeah.
You know, which one are you going to do? I am so loving this, guys. I know y'all are loving this too. So I got one more question for you, Ryan. One more. Because I know I'm enjoying this and we could go on and on, definitely. With people who want to be full-time entrepreneurs, because I'm hoping that more people want to emerge as entrepreneurs, and I'm hoping with our conversation and tapping into your podcast and looking at the things you do and that I do, that that's what they want to do. What is the best advice you could give someone who's looking to become a full-time entrepreneur?
I'm glad you asked that. A lot of people ask if I would have done anything differently. And I say that the real answer is no. And the reason why is because I've positioned myself to have exactly what I want in my life. So yeah, there's like little petty things I probably could have done differently. Like, oh, if I had done this or that. No. Like the truth is, if I were to go back, like if I just woke up 5 years ago, the only thing I would do differently is I would do more of it.
Yes. So
I could distill down into basically four buckets every activity that I did that I felt in retrospect was really productive. Learning, networking, self-assessment, and sacrifice. Learning, first thing I did was I heard somewhere that the average American CEO reads 50 books a year. So I went, you know what? I'm going to read 50 books a year. And I don't mean like Nancy Drew novels. I mean like books, like Positive Psychology, 4-Hour Work Week, Rich Dad, Poor Dad, like books. And so I challenged myself to read 50 books a year, and I did it. And I stopped after that. But at least up front, I did it, and I learned some things. There's just wisdom. There is wisdom in books. You have to think a book is some an expert in some field that has decades of experience that is teaching you everything they know for like $20 and your time. Like, why wouldn't you do that? You know, like it, the amount of wisdom that is that is at your fingertips is it's no excuse. And then the second thing is networking. Everybody has heard, oh, it's all about who you know. But who can honestly say that they take time out of their day every day to meet someone new? When I realized in 2012 that if you had asked me right when I started my journey, when I realized I'm meant to be an entrepreneur, you would have asked me, how many millionaires could you call or text today and have a warm response within 24 hours?
Mm-hmm.
That is not family or like family friends. I would have told you pretty confidently that answer is zero. Yeah. I know no one. Now it's quite the opposite. Some of my best friends are very wealthy. I have folks, when I put out a podcast, I'll get a text from a millionaire every now and again. It's crazy because I've put years and years and years and hours into mm-hmm. it. And that also can fall into the learning bucket because people will teach you things that are not in books, not on podcasts, not in seminars. You need to be meeting people. And then self-assessment is monumental.
Right.
If you don't know who you are, you don't know the things that will make you quit when times get tough.
Yeah.
And you don't know if you are subjected to a hype story or if you found something real. You need to know who you are, and you probably do not know you. I am a psych major undergrad. I have spent years asking myself who I am, and I am still constantly discovering things about myself. I don't know me. If you are listening into this and going, I know me, no, you don't.
No, you don't.
You don't. You need to be spending time, and this is probably the most important thing. The more you can understand you, the more decisions become easier to make because you know what things to say no to, which are really hard.
Right.
And then the last bit we talked about multiple times tonight, which is sacrifice. Whenever you identify that opportunity, whenever you prove that concept and you plan, it is time to make the sacrifice. And the cool thing about sacrifice is you'll discover after you make the sacrifice, a lot of the things that you thought were really valuable to you actually aren't. And it's really liberating when you have subscriptions to things and like a lifestyle you're trying to maintain. And then when you get rid of all of that, and you're like, I don't care that my clothes are old and have holes in them. Right? I don't care. And all of a sudden you're like, and guess what? Nobody around me cares either.
Exactly.
So why did I waste all this time and money worrying about this stuff?
Right.
So, yeah. I really want to end with this. I've loved this conversation, and anyone listening in, I am not selling anything. I am literally here to help people. I thoroughly enjoy helping people. You are welcome to reach out to me on my website or on my LinkedIn. I would love to help you. Even if you're never going to buy real estate, even if you're never going to start a job, I don't care if you're a janitor or a CEO or unemployed or homeless. I don't care. I would love to help you. I just thoroughly enjoy helping people. So, again, thank you. I had a blast on, we probably went way over your normal.
And I'm okay with that.
I had a blast.
Yes, I did too. I thank you so much for even taking the time to sow into my listeners. My podcast is still like pretty new. And I thank God for, you know, giving me that vision, but he's also tapping me into people who are outside of my sphere. And when I say sphere, I mean people who are outside of like events and who are outside of just what I'm used to. He's tapping me into other people, and I'm just loving it. I really enjoyed our conversation. I will definitely have your contact information in the show notes. I want people to listen to your podcast and to take these nuggets that you drop, because they are valuable. Like, oh my gosh, this is just amazing stuff. And I really want people to stop living in fear of failing. Like, you're going to be okay.
Yeah.
You'll be okay.
Yeah, Tim Ferriss, 4-Hour Work Week. It will challenge the way you think about failure.
Right.
Things will be okay. As long as, you know, you'll get hit by a bus, and, you know, as long as you have your health and you don't, you know, get a loan from a loan shark who's going to bust your kneecaps if you don't pay him back, as long as you don't do anything like
that,
you are going to be fine.
Exactly.
You need to get over your fear. But at the same token, got a plan, got to prove it.
Exactly. Thanks again, Ryan, so much for coming on tonight. We definitely have to connect again.
Yes.
And talk and just have some more fun. I have really, really enjoyed this. I cannot wait to see what else God has in store for you, how you're going to continue to sow into other entrepreneurs. So I'm just grateful. So thanks again.
Yeah. Again, I was honored. I had a blast. And I really hope that the listeners don't just be entertained by our words. I really hope y'all find some inspiration to take some action and really get what you deserve.
Right. Exactly. Thanks so much again, Ryan. Yeah.
Thanks again.
All right. Have a good one.